Good evening. Welcome to WFIU and Profiles, our opportunity to visit and meet with the people who make Indiana so interesting. Tonight is a special program. Our guests are Mstislav Rostropovich and Janos Starker, two of the greatest cellists the world has ever known. Rostropovich is also a conductor and pianist. Starker, one of the greatest cello teachers ever. This is the first time these two giants have ever been interviewed together. I am Bob Willard, and I will be your host this evening. I asked our guests how they would like to be addressed, and they suggested I call them Slava and Janos. It is seldom that we have two of the world's greatest artists on the same stage at the same time. Now, what brings you two together? Janos?
Well, to my knowledge, what happened was that when the Bloomington cello family decided that this year I should be honored because I reached this darn old age, then they started making plans. And one day I found out that Slava is willing or wanting to come to Bloomington. I said, well, that's about as nice a gesture as I ever heard from any colleague, so therefore I'm looking forward to it. And now, D-Day is coming.
Well, Slava, what was your reason?
I tell you, that's, you know, I know the name of Janos and his fantastic art as greatest musician. I know him very long ago because he started his career in the West, of course, much earlier than I come to the West. That's why I admired him so long time in my life and always admired all my life. And when I hear that he celebrated his jubileum, I ask Tsutsumi, because that's his pupil and very good cellist and also my friend, and I tell to him, please give me just date, because I have very tight schedule, when celebrated his birthday. And that birthday, real birthday, was in another little bit time, that different time for this festival. And I make this time possible for me coming here. And I'm very happy about that. I'm very proud that I'm coming here and make possible participation for as conductor for this fantastic fantastic fest in the whole world.
Well, let me ask you each to tell me what it is about the other's musicianship that you most admire. Slava, let me ask you first.
You know that he, for me, that's very very great example in my life. How he, first of all, of course, he's a phenomenal cellist, but he's a very honest musician, you know. He not make compromise. He make always perfection for his art, and that teach me very much. Janos, for me, example, he always with music, always with his pedagogical, fantastic activity, he always enormous, phenomenal, honest, and phenomenal dedicated to that. His relation with his profession, phenomenal.
Well, what a tribute. Janos, what about you?
Well, the only problem for me to pay tribute
well,
excuse
to... Excuse me, Bob. I would like if you ask more me, because that we celebrated Janos.
No, but that's perfectly legitimate, the question that what makes me a little bit hesitant is that to say what is good about and what's great about Slava, you realize that all the honors he has received in his life, I understand, not too long ago, you bought that other house so as to put in all the honors and all the things that he has gotten.
But I was
he's one of the great musicians of our time, and he has done more for cello playing than anybody else by making sure that all the composers of our time has written works which is not just for him, but for the rest of the cello community. That he's a great cellist, that's taken for granted. And I feel that I always felt that he can play as well in any given evening as he feel like.
Janos, you led to something, and I'd like to follow up on it. You both were good friends of some of the greatest composers of the 20th century, and I can think of Prokofiev, Bartok, Shostakovich, Bernstein, Britten, Kodály, and so forth. What lasting marks will these and other composers of the time leave for the future? Slava?
If we cellists love our instrument. We must think about this instrument in future. Because that our colleagues who lived 200 years ago was not very good patriot of cello. Because that's Mozart practically not composed something for cello. Beethoven composed for violin much more, etc., etc. Brahms and another composer that's much more make enrich repertoire for piano, for violin, but not make that repertoire for cello. And that's dependent of performer. Because, for example, that relation with Kodály János, that's I hear thousands of performances of sonata Kodály for cello solo, but never hear performance what near to quality of performance of János. You know, and of course, if he performed like that, that's all composers have interest composed for cello. And I think that we, János and I, must be very proud because we enrich cello repertoire for future. But cello repertoire like a bread for the performer. Because people in concert hall coming not only for performer, coming also for repertoire. You know, if violinist or pianist play Beethoven concertos or Brahms concertos for piano or Mozart concerto for violin and piano, that many people come hear this genius music. And we much not so rich cellists. And when we now, after 20th century, in 21st century, we have a composer like a Bartok, like a Kodály, like another great name. I think that young generation cellists also continue that what we start in this century. And even with my phenomenal admiration for Casals, but Casals was absolutely genius as cellist, but he, even so great cellist, he not so himself not so have great admiration for modern composer Casals. That's why he not play many modern composer, and that's for this thing I think that János take a repertoire forwards for 21st century.
Do you feel that then both of you feel that the skills that you brought to the cello caused composers to write some pieces that they might not have done if you hadn't either asked them or had the skills to perform them?
Precisely, that's what Slava is stating clearly, that in the past, because there were not enough cellists of the quality that would have induced Beethoven, Mozart, Schumann, and all the others, they wrote occasionally certain things, but it was, in our view, because the cello playing was not such that the composer was truly interested in writing.
Absolutely.
And also what Slava mentioned about Casals. Casals stopped, his musical taste stopped in the 20th century. At the beginning of the 20th century, he refused to play things written in his time. And in 1915, well, I'm not sure that you know about it, Slava, that in 1915, when Kodály finished the solo sonata, he sent it to Casals, and Casals said, I'm too old for it. And at that time, Casals was a grand total of, I think, if I add up, 39 years old. And he felt that he's too old to learn that piece. And that's why it took 6 years until a publisher accepted the Kodály Soul Sonata to be printed. So in some sense, Casals, with all the admiration, and he's our father and creator, basically. So, but we are feeling very sorry that if he would have been interested in writing of his time, cello playing wouldn't have to have waited so long to be accepted as an international concert instrument. And of course, the popularization of the instrument, the maximum has been done by Slava. In between, there was another Russian who done a great deal, and that was Grisha Piatigorsky. But he represented another world. But basically, it's Slava whose effect in the second half of the 20th century brought cello to the public, big public.
But you know, that's all composer what composed for me. That's know how you play phenomenal and hear you. I know that Shostakovich was in your concert when you was in Moscow. And I know that composer, do you help enormous also for me, for help enormous. But composer hear you and would like compose for cello. And because Russia was closed country, that's only possible founded some cellist for Russia, because that Russia have that curtain. Yes, curtain. And that I'm sure that many composers were written for me, Russian composer, would like written for Janos, but that curtain closed.
Let me just step back with Casals. You've mentioned him several times, both of you, and I wondered what his influence was on you both to become cellists as you are today.
Well, I think it's very simple that he was the first man who we heard play, who played in a way as we imagined the cello should sound. Isn't it? Because the cello playing level, there were here and there in the world people who played very well the cello. But when we went to concerts and listened to cellists, we were not very well. At least when I was 7, 8, and 9 years old, I went to concerts. That's not something that I'm interested. The first time that I heard at age 6 Casals, then I knew, the cello can sound really well. And then came somebody else by the name of Fireman, who showed that how much more can be done with a cello, that it doesn't have to sound always like a cello, it can be sound something else. That affected us, I think.
Yes, exactly. But we have little different parents, because my father was cellist, and when my mother gave me just milk, you know, I already hear cello, because my father practiced in house.
How is the training that you received as cellist different than what is being offered today?
You know, I coming first time in the West, 1947. Before 1947, I was only in my country, in Russia. That's my first visit was. And in this moment, I hear many cellists. I also participate in some competition. And that was a real different kind of school, little bit different kind of school. German school, French school, and Russian school. That have a little bit difference. And I hear that's not needed for me say who played, German people or French people. I have immediately hear a little bit difference between cello school. But after coming so great cellist in the world, that's Janos Starker. In great activity was Navarre, Fournier, Gendron, exactly. That's another some great cellist, Mainardi for Italy, etc. And you know, and because of now is connection for this enormous progress, electronic progress, for record, for radio, etc., etc. That's now all cellists take the best what have each school, and now have practically no difference, because that you know. For example, we all hear how play Janos Starker, how play Gendron, Navarre, and Tortelier, and we all take the best from these cellists. And now, because that we have much nearer contact because of electronic, a record, a radio, tape, etc., and also visit. Much easy. We unified one family in our planet.
So you're saying there's not a Russian and a French school, now there is a universal school of cello playing.
I would maybe a little bit expand on it, that there is a sort of a Russian school, French school, this school, but it doesn't mean that all Russians are Russian school, all French are French school, because they are all exchanging information, and eventually the temperament and the basic talent of that person will guide him or her into a certain type of playing. But the basis maybe of your question was the general education. It was much more concentrated musical studies in Russia, as it used to be in Budapest, than when we came to America we found here, because there was no such thing as music school of a university. The conservatory studies were totally different, because now it's combined with general studies, which we also had to have, but the focus was total immersion in music at the time when you grew up and I grew up.
When you're teaching or coaching with a young player, how do you recognize the difference between just a good player and the really musical talent, the genius?
When you read a book, whether it's a good book or a bad book, it's the same. If you look at a painting and either you like it or you don't like it, but you can describe that whether it's an amateur or whether it's a professional who painted it. After all the years when somebody sits down and plays one scale, we know whether the person is talented, musical, or what.
Is it really that quick? It's like telling whether a conductor is any good?
Yes, but mind you, we're not teaching people who are the greatest talents in the world. We teach people to become professionals and to do whatever necessary, whether to be principal cellist or in the section or in a string quartet or whatnot. We, as I say it, and I'm sure you agree with that, Slava, that... We are providing information. Yes. We don't want them to play the way we do. Mm-hmm. We just provide the information and explain that what we have learned in our lifetime and so help them to find themselves.
And you know, also that's questions, how take it our teaching student? Because if one talented student take it everything what he or I tell to him, that we tell more and more to him. But some is not talented, that he not take it all information what we give to this guy, and that's not very talented.
But my favorite is also that if a student comes and plays so well that we are not sure that we want to really show something, then we tell stories.
You mean if you think they're better than you are?
Not better, but at the time they play something well prepared and it's basically very good. You would tell them that now I like it this way, that way, but it doesn't make that much difference. So you just tell that what did the composer told us at the time.
You know that very interesting. And you know, before I come to master class, I make prayer for God. Please take a cellist, not very, very, very talented, not very good cellist, because that's easy make masterclass. That's tonight I make masterclass here, and I'm a little bit worried because Janusz have such phenomenal student, and I worried if that play very well, that I must so much think what I must to do.
Sometimes like when I give master classes, I tell the students, please play badly so I have a lot to talk about.
Exactly. Yes.
And no stories to tell. You can just work with that. If our audience is not well informed on cello playing, and we have a vast audience in the radio listeners, what would you say they should be listening to as part of the repertoire to become more familiar with your instrument?
Well, just pick up the recorded catalog of Slava or mine for them.
But that's like 12 recordings of the Brahms Double Concerto or something. Between the two of you.
You did only three times, or I did three times. You recorded Brahms four times, but
no, but Brahms I recorded two times only.
Okay.
Once with Oyster and once with Perlman. Two times.
Is the Double Concerto a piece that someone should hear, or is it the Bruch, or should they hear the Dvorak, or should they listen to the Bach suites? What would be considered the great composition?
My usual suggestion is that try to listen to it on the radio, and if you like it, buy the record.
Man, you're going to put me on the spot. You're going to bait this one, aren't you?
No, because the obvious thing that every person who ever been in a concert hall knows that the cellists' most known piece is the Dvorak Concerto. And that is partly the reason what we way before talked about, why the cello has became an accepted concert solo instrument later, because there was only the Dvorak Concerto, the great masterpiece. There were others, but not Beethoven Piano Concerto and Violin Concerto and Brahms Violin Concerto and Piano Concertos. That's what Slava was talking about. So we have the most known signature piece of all cellists is Dvorak Concerto.
Yes. Okay. But you know, I also think that, for example, I play many new composition, and sometimes I think that I know that's very great piece for cello, very great composer, but still unknown completely now, because that's very young. For example, I have Cello Concerto by Boris Tchaikovsky, a Russian composer. Yeah. Also, I had to play some his composition for cello and small ensemble. I think that's absolutely phenomenal composer. And composition for cello, phenomenal. But, you know, that's not yet popular. I only, because people don't notice. And I only make prayer for some young cellist, play this, and take this fantastic composition for the world. And now that's, for example, concerto of Henri Dutilleux, French composer. That's great music, real great music. But now I'm so happy that more and more young cellists play this concerto, and that's coming, of course, for repertoire. And, of course, impossible now to make comparison between Dvořák concerto, which already maybe 50, 60 years in the stage, or new composer who now composed. You know, but I'm sure that for future coming composition, what now composed, even before, because that's great composition for quality.
But of course you are aware of the fact that the audiences are still have some reluctance to hear the compositions which have been written in the past.
Yes.
Sometimes even they have reluctance for Stravinsky's music, or Hindemith's music.
Yes.
But the fact is, as the music appreciation goes through the next stage and the next stage, people will gradually discover those works which were already great at the time when they were written, but it takes longer time to get
absolutely
into the
repertoire. 100% right.
So that what you've created, the music that has been written for your both your talents, is the kind of music that cello players will be playing 50, 100 years from now.
Not everything.
Not everything, I understand.
Not everything at all. My theory, I play many compositions. But new composition. But my theory, I play 6 composition mediocre, and God, hear how much I work, and make number 7 fantastic composition.
You know. Of course, you're familiar with the famous quote from Sir Thomas Beecham, that he was the one after conducting a world premiere of a piece, that Albert Hall is the only place where composers, new composers, hear their works performed twice because of its echo.
You both play numerous concerts, numerous different pieces of music, and I've become acquainted recently with seeing great performers using music. Do you find that that helps you, or is it this just a crutch that they fall back on, or does it free you up to do other things if you would put the music out while you're playing?
Yeah.
Well, there are certain people in the world like Slava who has a legendary memory, and he memorizes very quickly everything. I used to when I was a child, but because I spent 10 years in orchestras, in operas and so on, my memory had a certain lack in training, which means that for many, many decades I played everything without music. But then, as I'm not sure that whether I talked to you once about this, saying that the memory question, that Fritz Reiner, my idol and my conductor for 9 years, one day was conducting Eroica Symphony. And he rehearsed, no music, nothing, and then came the evening and he put out the score in the concert. And I was so surprised, because that was the time, especially when it became very popular, that Sacre de Printemps had to be conducted only, never with music, and so on. And I asked him after the concert, how come? And he looked at me and said, when I look at the music, I get new ideas. And that sort of became for me a guiding thing, that, for instance, nowadays when I play Bach suites, I put on the music. And I keep changing, improvising, and doing, not discovering brand new things, but choosing from previously experimented things, something else. So for me, the music is almost an essential part. Sometimes one doesn't use music for Dvořák concerto or some of the things that we can improvise without music.
But you're not bothered by having to use music when you do
it? Not at all. Some people are criticizing this, or some people think that if you have music in front of it, then the audience cannot see your face as well, or something of that sort. And then you are just practicing and not playing. There's variety of views on that one.
You know, I play all cello repertoire in memory.
Okay.
But sometimes now, when I repeat this concerto, I play with music, okay. Modern. I remember that when I play in New York, my cycles concerto, and that's for me composed my very dear friend, great musician, great composer, Lucas Foss. But that was so difficult for memory, and I play, would like play in memory. But Bay, when I come to the Carnegie Hall, play this concerto, he conducting in memory. I not say to anybody good morning, because if I say good morning, I lost his concerto. And I come to the stage and play in memory in Carnegie Hall. But 2 weeks after, I play in Buffalo. Already I have not enough nerves I make with music. But conducting orchestra, I always with score. I have in memory scores, but conducting score, why? Because I have attention for 100 people in the orchestra. If I make some mistake, must be suffer 100 people. If I make mistake as cellist, suffer I myself. If I conducting, and the conductor Kondrashin, Kirill Kondrashin, he also conducting always with score, with music. And he tell me, you know, Slava, I'm nervous because if some even Beethoven symphony in finished, that Beethoven finished with several accords, several bars, pum, pum, and conductor tell me, I think one more or that's finished. And that's very important music in this moment.
Make sure you got the right yes, number exactly. of chords.
It's like, again, Sir Thomas Beecham, who the piece was over and kept conducting.
Yes, yes, yes.
And then somebody said it's over. He said, thank goodness, he said.
That's
each of you came from a culture, and we talked about this earlier, that revers classical music. And yet you live in a culture that classical music is only a small part of what the listening public listens to. Do you have any thoughts about how this can be remedied? Or
First, I have to correct the statement. We come from two cultures where a certain number of people loved classical music, not the whole culture.
Okay.
And the same way as in the United States, the majority of people go from rock and roll and mountain fiddling and the like and folk music, the same way in Russia there were tens of millions of people who never heard Beethoven and never everything else, yeah. Except comparatively was a slightly larger number in Russia, as it was in my small country in Hungary, who appreciated classical music than when we came to America. But right now, it's also growing and growing and growing. It just, if you agree with me, it's the same thing of this topic of classical music appreciation as with politics. Politician comes there, always says, not enough is being done about that. Whether it's going to be about poverty, about pure water or whatever, or nothing is being reducing taxes, but always not enough. And this is what we are living now, that variety of places, but not enough is being done about the classical musical culture. And of course, it's never enough. But an awful lot of people in the United States are doing terrific work and all over the world to enhance the appreciation for classical music. And as cellists, we are rejoicing because we have the golden age of cello playing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who would be other cellists who are in the front of the public today that you would say would be a good opportunity for us to hear that have some great talent?
That's always a tricky question because there are so many.
Exactly.
There's so many. There's so many people who are my from between the age of 12. I mean, Slava gave a first prize of his competition to a 12-year-old girl or something, and they are all terrific. There's hundreds of them around the world who are playing and playing and playing.
Okay, so
there's no. Obviously, we think of our own students whose name we are more familiar with or something, but there are all over the place cellists who are superb. Not necessarily great cellists, but terrific cellists, of which some of them will grow into being fun.
And I tell you that, you know, when I start my career, I tell you that's very clear who is great for me. Starker, Navarro, Gendron, Fournier, several names, not so many. But now, impossible to say who is the best for new generation, because so multiplied, great cellist multiplied. And that's now only questions of taste. That some people come to concert like cellist with great temperament, or maybe not so clean technique. Another like very clean technique and not maybe so much temperament. And that's now questions of the taste of public who coming and make enormous assortment of great cellist.
Well, let's not, of course, bypass the fact that we both admire very much Yo-Yo. Yes. Yo-Yo Ma, yeah. Who is a superbly gifted man, terrific performer and terrific cellist, right. And so on. He is now actually garnering more recognition, name recognition, than anybody. But beyond that, there are hundreds of cellists, exactly. Of whom, as time goes on, will turn out that whether they are belonging to what we call dehors class performers. Exactly. Because this is one of the mistakes that people make, that they keep asking, who is the one, who is two, who is three? There is no number one, number three. There are some people who love one, somebody likes the other one, and so on. The main thing is to reach a certain level, which is the French expression, dehors class. It doesn't belong anymore to the group. It's above a certain level. From then on, it's just the individual music lover's taste, that whether I like him or me or whoever.
So if I follow this correctly, then we had Casals, we had those few, Fournier and so forth that you mentioned, and now there's a great mass of cellists out there.
But, you know, when Casals still alive, we have no many. That's maybe Casals, maybe another two cellists, I don't know.
That was
Casals was like a king alone. Uh-huh. And after that's coming generation, you know? And now coming...
That's what he started. Has become.
Some people think that we are guilty of raising all those cellists.
Okay. Slava,
yes.
I don't think an interview would be full unless I asked you the important question is how we understand why you left Russia in 1974 and then didn't go back till 1991. Can you share that with us? Are you comfortable with that?
Yes, I'm comfortable, very comfortable. You know that in our system what was in Soviet Union, communist was that in top for government, for system, that's very special system was. And, you know, I have already my idols in music. My two idols was Shostakovich and Prokofiev. And until 1948, I think that everything's all right in my country. Government give that help to education. But 1948, even a little bit before, that's coming some rules from Communist Party against formalism in music. That Zhdanov, Stalin. That was 10th of February 1948. And tell very easy, that's communist, tell Shostakovich and Prokofiev, etc., that's very bad composer. That's a real composer without any talent. And I know, if not make some commission from the government, because for composer or for writer, exist in Soviet Union only commission from the government, not exist private commission. If you not make commission for composer, if you forbidden perform this composer, and of course not make some commission. And I know, I tell you honestly, Prokofiev and Shostakovich coming to hunger, have no money for food. And that's impossible forgive for me, these people, this system for that. And after that, I know, I see already that persecuted this system, only talented people. Because this system is have favorite of mediocrity. And that's why always our government was against, in any profession, in music, against Prokofiev, Shostakovich, in poetry, against Pasternak, against Akhmatova, later against Brodsky, for painting, against Chagall, against Kandinsky, etc., etc. And I understand. That's why when coming difficulties for Solzhenitsyn, I make protected him. I invited him to my house, my home, and he was 5 years live in my home because I think that he is great. And he coming to me when he was greatest, officially greatest writer. Khrushchev give to him that title, second Tolstoy, second Dostoevsky. But when Khrushchev changed for Brezhnev, Brezhnev say, no, he is against our system, against our people. He's no talent. He's just nothing, zero. And two ministers asked me for I take him out from my home. And I tell, no, my friends. And of course, after that, cancel all my concert, take me out from Borisov Theater, cancel my concert in Moscow, in St. Petersburg, only I have possibility, cancel my my concert tour in the West. That's 1974. I have no job in my country. And take me out for 2 years to the West. But after 4 years, that's 1974, cancel my citizenship in Russia. That's why I stay without dreaming for a future coming back to my country. But thanks to God, life changed. Now I come back.
And you went back in 91, is it?
90.
Okay.
90, I come back with National Symphony Orchestra from Washington.
Oh, played the concert in the, yes, in the square, didn't you?
Yes. No, first I make concert only in concert hall. Okay. That's second time, seventh time.
You both have left quite a legacy for all of us, those that listen to recordings, those that attend concerts. I thank you both for being with us today. It is a great pleasure for me to sit in the same room with you.
Enjoyed speaking to you.
Thank you, Janosch, and Slava.
Thank you.
During the course of our conversation this evening, both artists mentioned two works in particular, the Dvorak Cello Concerto and the Brahms Double Concerto. We will be hearing selections from both our guests. First, the Brahms Double Concerto, the final movement, played by Mstislav Rostropovich and David Oistrakh with the Cleveland Orchestra, conducted by George Zell, a recording made in 1969, and this will be followed by the Dvorak Cello Concerto, played by Janosch Starker with the Philharmonia Orchestra, conducted by Walter Suskin. And now here's the last movement of the Brahms Double Concerto. We have just heard the final movement of the Brahms Double Concerto, played by Mstislav Rostropovich cello, David Oistrakh violin, with the Cleveland Orchestra, conducted by George Zell. And now we will hear the Dvorak Cello Concerto, the final movement, played by Janosch Starker. Thank you. We have just heard the final movement of the Dvorak Cello Concerto, played by our guest, Janos Starker, with the Philharmonia Orchestra, conducted by Walter Suskin. I am Bob Willard. Thank you so much for listening.
The program you just heard was recorded in the studios of WFIU in September of 1999. Christina Kuzmich, producer. Engineering and editing by Michael Paskash. For WFIU, thanks for listening.